Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 5, Episode 2 of MindClickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2024. Today, I have the absolute pleasure to jump on and be joined by Sathyu, aka G2 Stride Sathyu, previous professional Rocket League player turned coach and previous winner of the most recent London Major. How are you going, brother?
I'm going great. Things are going well on the competitive side of things, so I'm happy.
Awesome. We love that. When things are going well, then we hit our stride, G2 stride, things are going good. So, yeah, good to hear. Really appreciate you jumping on, taking the time to jump on today and explore your mind about some of the things. I know we did a bit of a round table, I want to say, when was it, like a year ago or two years ago now?
It was a while ago. I don't know the date exactly, but yeah, it was a while ago.
We had a few of the boys on. It was good to sort of compare and contrast, you know, coaches who come from professional playing background versus not playing background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I imagine some of the stuff we'll jump in and have explored today as well. But usually what we do on a MindClick is take us back to the origin. When did you start? Mm-hmm. How did it start? And, you know, when did you get into Rocket League and why?
Yeah, so it all started for me back when Rocket League came out on PlayStation Plus for free. Mm. I hadn't even had a PC. I didn't really know too much about PC gaming. I just had a PlayStation for FIFA. That's really all I played, FIFA, the occasional Call of Duty, and just like other sports games like 2K, NHL. So Rocket League came out. A couple of my high school buddies and I got it, and we decided to all start playing together. Grinded for a little bit. They eventually got bored of it. I didn't. And it kind of blossomed into, you know, eventually being like, maybe I play against like a current pro at the time. And back then that was before season one. Playing against someone in a lobby like that and being like, wait, maybe I'm actually like competing with them. And then ended up buying and building my own PC. And then the rest was history. I competed since season one. Lots of, you know, veteran North American names in kind of my repertoire of like teammates. But my first big breakthrough was back in 2017 or 2018 with Bread, with AXP and Sypical. And we'd eventually go on to become SSG. We played a couple of DreamHacks, played season 7. I got kicked after season 7. Came back with Shock and Dapper on Afterthought and eventually Susquehanna Sonics in Season 9. Had another good season and then played a little bit of Season 10, but probably the combination of COVID and just aging kind of aged me out of the game. And went back to finish school because I had, with Sonics, I had, going all the way back to SSG, I'd been doing undergrad alongside playing professionally in Season 7. Mm. And then I decided to take a year gap with Sonics because I really wanted to see how far I could go. And then I went back to school after I was done with Sonics and transitioned into coaching during that point.
And here we are.
So, yeah, and here we are. Here we are 3 years later now at that point.
Absolutely. So. That's awesome. I guess to sort of unpack that a little bit, and it's good that you mentioned it as well. I know that a lot of listeners on MindClick is some, you know, we sometimes have parents, we sometimes have some of the younger guys listening as well who are balancing that act between studying and, you know, playing professionally or wanting to play or currently playing like semi-professionally. How did you find the balance back then? You know, juggling everything.
Honestly, I was very routined. I was very structured. I woke up at the same time every day. Mm. I had the class scheduling with college. You're given your classes. You can kind of choose a little bit when you take certain classes, but for the most part, you get your classes, and then that's the same schedule for the remainder of the semester. So it was pretty much go to class in the morning, go to lunch, do like an hour or two of work in the library, go to my last couple classes for the day, go back home, do any homework if I didn't finish it at the library earlier in the day, and then just grind Rocket League. And then try to fit in, you know, like whether it be like college parties or just like college, like sporting events, like football, for example, whenever I can. But prioritize Rocket League in the off time because that was what I was very passionate about, and I could also make some good money doing so. So, Yeah, I think just having a schedule was my biggest thing. Same thing every day. And I found I'd produce my best work in school and Rocket League when I was kind of forced to balance all that stuff. I really felt like I worked better under pressure than versus maybe in season 9 where I wasn't doing school as much on the side. I'd taken that gap year and I could just play all day. I'd say it led to a little bit of destructuring in my life. So I honestly say take the challenge and, you know, build out a schedule and be disciplined with it.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think it's important to have a schedule. I think especially nowadays we see a lot of players who are dedicating everything to Rocket League and not doing too much outside of the game. So it's hard that, to have some sort of functioning schedule in its sense. And I think what I've seen in the past as well is, especially if a player dedicates their day towards Rocket League, dedicates their day towards scrims. If scrims don't go well, then all of a sudden they've had a really bad day, right?
Right.
So it sort of goes hand in hand in that. So I think it's good to sort of have a medium outside of the game to sort of exist still.
Definitely, yeah, and that's actually a great point too. I had a good support group in college. I had probably a group of like 5 or 6 like very close friends that on a whim I could just be like, let's go out and do something. And I used to always see those friends maybe the night before like a big tournament. I still clearly remember the first time making it into RLCS. You know, I had a test that week. I finished the test on Wednesday. I think the play-ins were like Friday, Saturday. That Friday night, I reached out to all those friends and I was like, let's just go do something. Yeah. And then I played some of my best Rocket League the day after. So definitely that support group is also super important and something I should have touched upon as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. I think it's massively important and it's really good to acknowledge that for sure.
Yeah.
Love that.
So, yeah.
I guess one of the biggest things that I've sort of been thinking about is, mm-hmm. I guess, when you transitioned into a coach, you know, what were the key things that you took over from being a player? Obviously, being in the prime seat in those, you know, headed moments that you've sort of been in the past. And then going into a coaching position, you sort of acknowledge, like, hey, I understand you. You know, I've been in your position. I acknowledge the things you feel. You know, what was that like for you transitioning into a coaching role?
So you're definitely right on a lot of the experience played into how I started coaching. just being in the positions that my players would be in and were in was a big help because I did kind of have a good grasp on how they were feeling at said moment and said time. A lot of it, though, was honestly looking to kind of other examples, like sporting examples. I think reading some books from well-established coaches in multiple sports, I think, was honestly my biggest go-to. Because I realized, looking back, those first, 2 years of it, I definitely was doing a lot wrong. And I'm still doing, you know, obviously I'm still learning. But I learned a lot in the last year, especially. And I'd say transitioning from player to coach, I kind of got to honeymoon as a coach when I first started. But then when, some of the bigger issues arose within a team, that's when I got challenged. And I learned a lot in those processes, but I also didn't handle all of them in the best way that they should have been handled. The transition was difficult, to say the least. It wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be, especially because I think I really do try to take it seriously. And I think the role of coach in Rocket League maybe isn't always looked upon favorably. I know by the community, they can't really know because no coach publishes their work. And that makes sense because there is a decent amount of strategy behind this game. And there's methodologies and ideologies that you want to keep within your team camp. But even among players, you know, it's not always, there's some coaches that are looked at as like cheerleaders. So, when it came to taking it seriously, I had a lot of stuff to learn in that, especially in that first year or 2 years after transitioning.
Yeah.
So it wasn't easy.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. I think that sort of hits nail on the head for me as well, especially because, you know, I jumped on board ideally initially as a performance coach. You know, I knew nothing about Rocket League. I think like 30 hours. I remember talking to CJ being like, I can't teach you how to play the game, brother, but I can teach you how to be the very best player outside the game, which in return will, you know, guide you to becoming the best player you can be. And that was sort of my initial methodology and ideology towards, you know, how I sort of thought I should be as a coach, not really having background, and then just sort of taking that as a learning process. And I think you mentioned it, you know, we're always learning, we're always going to make mistakes. And it's hard because sometimes those mistakes, we start to maybe think about them too much. Is that something you've sort of had in the past whereby, like, there might have been something like a situation where it's like, oh, I should have said something differently, or I should have done something differently, or, you know, did you get stuck in all that the emotion of thinking?
All the time. It's, I mean, still to this day, I think, again, I think I'm getting better at it. I think that was honestly probably something I also came with, like, my last year of just natural aging, because I'm 25 now.
Yep.
And I really felt like in the past year, I've learned how to really sit down and think things through logically before I kind of say anything. I was good at that in school, but not always the best when it came to, you know, talking and maintaining certain relationships. Sometimes I'd speak too quickly, or sometimes I'd say I wouldn't choose my words as carefully as I should.
Yeah.
But I think I've become better at that. And so I'd say I go through that sensation a lot less now that you were mentioning, but definitely the first 2 years, there was plenty of times where I was just like, man, I screwed that. I screwed that pretty badly.
Yeah.
Or I just really should have handled that differently.
Yeah. I think that sort of helps to mold almost like a mental template for the future of like, hey, I've experienced this before, you know, what was the result of that? Was it a positive result? Was it a negative result? And I can sort of take that as a learning for the future if that situation comes up again.
Yeah, agreed. Still to this, like, in, you know, even a couple of days ago, I was talking with Atomic and he was like, you know, why did you have the reaction to us performing poorly in said scrim from the day before, versus maybe in the past you would let it slide a little more. And it was because I just remember times of complacency that set in from a year or two ago, remembered that result from when I, you know, acted in a certain way and let them act in a certain way, and what happened because of that. So now it's like acting in the in a different way. So that's still very it happens a lot still.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Do you think that, I guess it's kind of hard to sort of acknowledge or sort of know, because I think every player does it, but do you think that when we talk about, I guess, our approach towards Rocket League, I guess from a player perspective, when we talk regionally, do you think that there is a massive difference, I guess, you know, the way that EU players approach the game, their mindset towards scrims versus, you know, some of NA and some of your boys?
So... So when it, mindset, yes, mindset, definitely. I think the Europeans treat, they treat this like it's something serious. They treat it like it's a true like sport. I think they're a lot more serious with everything involving the game at all. I think they almost, they see it as really a part of their lives and not just a job.
Yeah.
I think they live, they really live through the game, especially the French. I think that's a big thing too. I really do separate the French from the rest of Europe. I think the other Europeans are very similar to every other region. Like, I think the Brits don't take the game as seriously as as the Americans do, or the Oceanic, you know. I think the French are on a different level when it comes to that. But that's how it should be treated, in my eyes. So, yeah, there's definitely mentality differences regionally. I know everyone plays for different amounts of money, too. That affects it. Different legacies, different amount of spots to even make lands. So it's all treated very differently.
Yeah.
But the French do it the best. They do it the most professionally, I'd say.
Yeah, no, for sure. It is really interesting to see that. I think, you know, it does come out at LAN events and at majors, whereby, you know, I guess a player's mindset and attitude towards how they want to be as a team, have respect for each other, can definitely get shown.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
For sure. Yeah. Now, this is a big one. Obviously, Nick went on for about, he spoke for about 35 minutes. I couldn't get him to stop. But this whole idea of like scouting, talent identification, what makes a proper team? Obviously, Nick's topic all the way. But in your
That's his thing.
In your mind, I've had this conversation with a ton of people, whether you sort of prioritize a skillful player versus a player who has like a personality and can be open towards each other, has good comms, and then can, I guess, learn things down the line. Because there's sometimes, you know, we can teach a player to be you know, good, but we can't teach him to be a good teammate.
Yeah.
What do you sort of see the midline between, I guess, picking and choosing and what makes a proper team?
I mean, obviously communication is super important. The ability to be open with each other, like you mentioned, is very, very important. But I think there's also a stigma sometimes around skillful players because if you're either or, if you're either skillful or either a very open person, that is the best teammate. Obviously, it's not like they're not exclusive from each other.
Yeah.
You search for both. You search for the best combination of the both. If I had to choose between the two, I mean, it's still probably being a better teammate than anything, because I think you see lower floors with people that can't speak to each other properly or can't, you know, conduct the environment as a team should. So yeah, I'd say if I had to choose, but I ideally, you know, there's, and in a lot of cases you have people who are good at the game and good teammates, and you definitely make a big effort to find that combination of the two.
Yeah. No, for sure. Getting that double is definitely the double golden, for sure.
Yeah. It's like the age old discussion too of like mechanics versus smart player. But it's like a lot of mechanical players are really smart. There's always the stigma. It's like you're one or the other, and that's just not the case. That's not true. Ideally, you take the smart mechanical player.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. So, and I think it's important for players to sort of have that acknowledgement towards what they can do themselves. We always talk about, you know, change and eliciting change, and I think the first step to, you know, I guess making change is having that realization that, hey, change is possible. You know, if it's something that might have happened or like a reaction towards something, that, hey, you know, I can do something differently, and sort of having that ownership, I think is
yes,
a good word for it, taking ownership of your actions.
Agreed. Like accountability.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my number one trait always when I'm looking at someone. It's when I was a player as well as when I'm a coach. If I see someone who makes mistakes and can't own up to them, and then also, like you said, elicit change afterwards, that's my biggest red flag in a person.
Yeah.
So no matter mechanics, no matter, you know, other character traits, if they don't have accountability, then I have issues.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's the biggest.
It definitely is hard to sort of change someone who doesn't have that mindset.
Correct. Yeah. That's the most difficult to change. I think you can make people have a good relationship to where they're, you know, somewhat close and can speak to each other.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to make people learn accountability. That's probably one of the hardest things to teach, if possible. So
yeah,
Almost have to go through like life changing experiences themselves to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've definitely had that. In a few of my teams.
Yeah, I mean it's to be expected, because especially with the up and coming generation, like I would have hated going through high school, or is that what you guys call it in Australia?
Yeah,
high school.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have hated going through that like online, because I think that's probably your best chance at going through so much social interaction and being socially like normalized.
Yeah.
So a lot of the newer kids, I think, lost that sense of accountability in that sense. And young kids in general, it's hard to hold them accountable to a lot of that stuff. So,
That's
absolutely how I see it.
It sort of goes off the line a little bit, but and we'll jump back online a little bit. But in terms of professionalism within esports, obviously, we're sort of talking about, you know, Rocket League players tend to be quite young. Do you see like a major difference between, I guess we do, right? Between other sports, between other games.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at like how our CSGO conducts them, our CSGO team conducts themselves, or like our League of Legends team.
Yeah.
That's probably the best example. Cause you know, we'll boot camp in Berlin from time to time, whenever there's a European major, and the league team plays out of there every day, because I think European League is like their league play is LAN, and it's in Berlin as well.
Crazy.
So they just play out of our boot camp facility there. And those guys, what they do is night and day to what Rocket, any Rocket League program does.
Yeah.
Even, and I probably view Vitality as like the yep. gold standard in Rocket League.
Yep.
But like what our league team was doing was just head and shoulders above that. And I know I don't see all Vitality's inner workings, but I mean, they have these guys, they have them on professional schedules. It is like they do everything together and they do everything by the book. And it's insane. And they're very dominant in Europe, at least. So it obviously works to a good degree. But yeah, it's, I see, you know, you could say certain players in the Rocket League scene are pretty professional, but if you compare any of them to the league guys, they're, that's the thing. no one's professional.
Yeah. I guess that's good for your boys as well, to have that exposure as well towards how other teams conduct themselves. I guess they're lucky in that way, would you say, or?
They're exposed to it. That doesn't necessarily mean they take it all in.
True.
I think there's been elements, though, you know, that we've seen that the league team does, that even my guys, both rosters that I've coached so far, have like looked at it and been like, huh, that might be useful. So they are lucky in that sense, I guess. They do take a couple elements, but they definitely also think a lot of it is, it'd be tough for them to execute on. So. Because it's a commitment. It's a real sport with league. So,
Sure. I think it goes pretty much in line with the age old mindset that, like, I've got to this point where I am now because of what I've done myself. So you know, why do I need to do something different? You know, what do I need to do that's outside of my own boundary that's going to actually make a meaningful change? And I think some players can get stuck in that mindset a little bit
easily.
But yeah, it's one of those age old mindsets, I think.
It's until like a, you know, a big organization with a really good team takes it to that next step and really has their players live like they're athletes. When we get to that point, then I think everyone will follow suit. But it's a heck of a, you know, cost to an organization to you know, house your players, feed them every day, have certain staff members that pretty much keep tabs on the team every day, more than just a coach, you know. You have staff members 4, 5, 6 for those teams. So, yeah, it'll happen at some point. But that's if Rocket League keeps growing. And obviously the monetary side of things also kind of improves over the years. So,
it will be interesting to see where we land. Yeah. I guess what next season holds as well.
Right, exactly.
It's definitely be good. But we've still got worlds ahead of us. You've still got worlds ahead of you. Well, I should say. Which will be exciting. Yep. So, good things to look forward to in the future, I think. Now, I think one of the big things that I often find myself thinking is, I guess, where do I draw, I guess, that idea of motivation towards wanting to jump on, wanting to sit through, wanting to, you know, go through scrims and go through the whole process of being a coach. What motivates you in that way to sort of do that and obviously take all those steps and obviously leads you to being a major winning champion?
I think it's two things. One is just the obvious fact of like going to majors is really fun.
Yep.
Being on stage is really fun. Being in front of the crowd is absolutely electric. And beating other teams is the greatest feeling of all time. but two, the more, I guess, realistic or more effective answer, I guess, is knowing that I'm responsible. Knowing that I'm responsible for our results, and I do think that's also kind of a fault in Rocket League coaching right now, is I think when a team loses, the coaches aren't really put under a microscope as much as they should be. Even though it's stressful to a coach, but it also brings legitimacy to the role.
Yeah.
It's like this guy actually has power in what they do.
Yep.
But my guys know I play a big part in it. The parents know I play a big part in it. The org knows I play a big part in it. So that also motivates me, knowing I play a part in us winning and continuing to win, continuing to be consistent. And if I don't do the steps that I need to do every day, we will show up unprepared and we'll be upset and we'll lose and it'll feel really bad.
Yep.
And so, that's probably the main motivator beyond just the actual lands themselves and being at the lands.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. There's like those external influences that impact your own motivations. You know, there's parents, mm-hmm. people, I guess, yep. relying and knowing that, hey, you know, Matt's going to turn up, he's going to do his job, he's going to, you know, make sure these boys are ready. And yeah. obviously that yeah. shows.
Yeah. And I don't want to let down those people, you know.
Yeah.
I want to make sure they're proud of how the team looks and how we conduct ourselves on stage.
Mm. So, absolutely. Yeah. How long did it mm-hmm. take for you to, I guess, find your own coaching groove of what worked in terms of, okay, this is sort of the way I want to go about how I want to be a coach?
There were a good amount of things I did right the first season coaching.
Mm.
The second season, I experimented a lot more, but also kind of maybe allowed slightly more player autonomy than in my coaching style I would like to.
Yeah.
So probably this year is the first year where I've come back and like, the last year was just teaching me all the stuff I was doing wrong, essentially. So I'd say this year is where I really found it and I'm confident in like my approach. Because there were parts of the first year I was confident in what I was doing, and then there were parts where I lost confidence. Last year I lost a lot of confidence. But then I found it again at the end of the year around Worlds. And ever since then, it's just been like, just I'm still confident in what I'm doing and what I, you know, preach to my guys and what I believe is right. So I'd say end of last year is when it really, I caught the groove, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. No, cool. I like that. I like sort of like that pathing of finding, you know, what works for you, what doesn't, and sort of taking that as a learning experience and taking those lessons as well, because I think they are pretty important, especially when we like reflect back as well, reflecting back on previous experiences and recognizing what we could have done wrong, what we could have done differently. I mean, and sort of, taking that for the future's lessons and the future values as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
100%. Now, you mentioned it, you had a few words in there. You mentioned the word confidence, and I guess confidence is a big one, especially for players, for coaches as well, to have confidence that the boys are going to rock up, do their thing, take ownership, and play how they want to play. How big do you think confidence is, I guess, especially in LAN setting, you know, being confident in front of your opponent, you're sitting across from them, you know, what does that look like, I guess, inside the mind?
Is this for coaches or players or both?
I kind of want to say both. What's your mindset on both?
Okay. So obviously it's, you should be confident. It's just like a general statement. It's obviously you should always be confident in what you do. Players, I mean, it looks like from on the field standpoint, it's just like lack of hesitation. Like proper execution on most of the little things, like most of your touches on the ball, your shots, how you dribble, for all that. From a coaching standpoint, confidence is letting your voice be heard. Really not holding back on what you think is right to be said. I think also it doesn't show as much on stage, but maybe more just behind the scenes, is constantly like day by day, just kind of beating in the play style that you believe is right.
Yep.
That was probably the biggest confidence for me to kind of find again. And is what I found at the end of last year. And kind of, I guess, pushing your boys through that feeling of confidence. Like when you say as a coach that if we do this and this and this, and you say it kind of with strength behind your voice, and that things will go well, and it's almost a blind confidence. They'll play better too. They'll feel that and they'll understand it, and they won't question themselves as much.
Yeah.
So that's usually what it looks like. Sometimes I like to not put on an act, but maybe go overboard and just like death stare at the other coach if possible. I try to like make eye contact with them from time to time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in London, I was just staring at Mateus the whole time. Yeah. I mean, that's my boy, but at the time that wasn't really a facade. I was in the moment, and we were up 2-0, and I was just like, pretty much in my head, I was just like, we're killing you. You have to respond.
Yeah.
And they did respond. They won the next two games. But that's also a branch of confidence as well. And sometimes it goes into the body language as well. But it's primarily in the words you say on stage and how often you echo them and how strongly you feel about them, I'd say.
Yeah.
As a coach.
No, 100%. Yeah. Absolutely. Completely agree. I think I think another way that confidence gets thrown around as well is scrim results. Like if the team's going well during the week, and then it's like, okay, we're really locking things down. But then it can be on the flip side as well. Like what happens if you go a whole week and you win one scrim? And it's like, do you go into the tournament with almost like a fake confidence? Or like where does that come from? Where does it manifest from?
At least with my teams, I don't believe in, if we have a bad week of scrims, we have to talk about them and we have to sort it out. I don't believe that you can kind of go into the tournament kind of with questions looming and questions in the air. I'm a strong believer in like scrim results do mean a lot. I know some people still kind of, and I think it's a coping mechanism, honestly. Some people still say scrims don't really matter, but I think they matter a lot. I think they really do. And not just like a one-off scrim against some team, but multiple scrims. If it looks good over multiple sets of scrims against a team, I think it'll look good on match day as well. So I believe in instilling confidence through good scrims. And if we aren't scrimming good on the week, there's a good chance a day or two before the tournament, we're already talking about what we've been doing wrong and we fix it by then. So yeah, I don't believe in like faking it, I guess. It's only, you're either doing well in scrims or you aren't, and you have to dig yourself out of a hole if you aren't. So
yeah, no, awesome, beautiful, I love that. And that's where those hard conversations come in, you know, being able to really get real with the boys and be like, you know things haven't been going well, we need to fix something, we need to get real, you know, we've flown all this way to perform, to play, so let's, you know, let's be serious about it, let's have respect for each other, and let's find you know what we're here to do.
Right. And importantly, too, is make sure, obviously, if you have a bad result, that's okay. If you have two bad results, that's okay, too. But you should start speaking about them.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you let a week of scrims go pretty poorly or pretty just not, it's not, there's no enthusiasm behind the results. That's where issues kind of arise. So you got to really, really tend to these issues as early as possible. But it's a balance because you don't want to. You don't want to overreact to a bad result immediately. You really got to think about what just happened in said scrim, and you have to think about whether it's worth a response yet or not. But definitely don't let things just loom and go into a tournament. Again, answer all the questions before the tournament starts.
Yeah, perfect. So, yeah. You sort of mentioned what I was going to sort of, I guess, catchphrase on, is that sort of recognizing that, hey, there's a mistake or maybe something didn't go right. Do you pinpoint that in the moment, or do you sort of let it go on and see if that issue resolves itself?
You know,
mentioning something versus sort of letting something play out.
So if it scrims, it's usually let's see if it plays out. Let's see if it resolves itself as we kind of continue. I think after a game or two, if it's still going wrong and you're at the half point in the scrim, where you played like four games usually. The last four, you try to make the change. In tournament, though, it has to be really between games. I'm not a huge fan of saying anything on the spot that's a major change to our style, unless we're doing something very clearly wrong. Or I'm not hearing something that's consistently said among the team in terms of communication. So in practice, it's after the half point in the scrim is when you start to make changes if they haven't resolved themselves.
Yeah.
And then in tournament, it's after said game or in the moment if it's really bad.
Yeah.
And that's how I see it.
And I think what we mentioned, or we've been mentioning all along, is you're going to, I guess, gradually build up that repertoire of reps of recognizing, hey, this is where I should say something versus this is where I should let something sort of unfold. And I think that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's just with experience, like you said, there's a lot to learn about those. I just call them like key timings or whatever. Yeah. It's just like there's those big moments that you have to say something or you have to let go and you have to kind of let the players figure it out themselves. You eventually get an eye for it after many reps, like you said. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. For sure. Love it. Great. Now, one of the big things, is it a con? Not really. The idea of timeouts and taking a pause in between a big series, you know, how important for that is, I guess, for you, you know, to sort of, I guess, have that bit of a notion of having a talk, getting the boys to sort of relax or keep alert? You know, where's your mindset for a timeout, and how important is it to sort of take a breath?
I mean, they're super important. I think we always encourage breathing between games anyway.
Nice.
And really, you know, there's a certain period of time where it's just silence and we shouldn't say anything. And there's a certain, especially like after a loss, if things are going well, the boys are always going to talk and they're going to be excited. But there's a period of time where things should be silent, and then a larger period of time where things should be talked about.
Yep.
When it comes to timeouts, so where you get that extended amount of time, I mean, I'm very thankful for them. I think it's where you can introduce like true proper changes. You can kind of recap what's been going on in the series and why you've had to take the timeout and how you go about fixing it. I always like going about it in that way. It's like, this has happened. This is what we do to fix it. And then let's play. And that also, this is why what we'll do is going to fix what we were, you know, doing wrong before.
Yeah.
And you know, make us win the series. So I mean, they're super important. I love the ability to take that time with the boys and really kind of lay everything out on the table and talk it out. So big fan of them. Glad Rocket League introduced them. I almost wish they were in best of fives as well, but I understand, you know, for timing reasons why they aren't.
Yeah.
But I love them. They're super important. And it's heck, even sometimes, you know, people talk about how it's like a momentum breaker for the other team. I think, I mean, there's truth to that, but I think sometimes maybe coaches rely too much on it just being a momentum breaker and not really saying anything of substance in between.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think that there's a few different coaches have, you know, different mindsets towards it. I think it's really good to gauge that.
Yeah.
Some coaches like them. Yeah. Some coaches love them.
Yeah.
Some hate them. I've had a few chats with a few boys that don't really like them. They just want to sort of let things go and go their own way, which I don't really agree with. But it's also interesting. Yeah. I'm sort of reflecting back. I remember, was it at LAN? I would have been on LAN, I think. I still remember we won first series. We won first game. And Cedar's like, let's take a timeout. I want to go get a banana. And, like, I just want to go take 5 seconds, get a banana, just chill. So it's interesting, like, perspectives on when players want to call timeouts as well. Have you had that in the past where someone's like, hey, I want a timeout just to do this? Or is it always up to your own discretion of, hey, we're going to call a timeout now?
No, I'll ask them from time to time. If I'm not positive that they need it right at that moment, I'll get that confirmation from them. But most of the time, no, it's usually just up to me. But a lot of the times I feel like are pretty obvious of when to do so. There's a few niche scenarios where you call it, you know, a lot of times it's like after you lose two games or,
yeah.
I think one time I held it till, yeah, one time I held it, I think we had lost three in a row, but it was a niche scenario. It was like, I had to see one more game to make sure that what we were doing wrong was actually what we were doing wrong. And then, you know, confirm what I'm going to say before that game seven. And that scenario did work out too. So, yeah, that's, I don't know how some people don't like them, but it's usually up to me.
Yeah.
Usually.
Nah, cool. I like that. Voice of reason.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I want to be that unbiased outside opinion.
Yeah.
So. When it comes to timeouts, you kind of need that.
Absolutely, for sure. Now, one thing that I sort of, I don't know, is I guess for me, just how I naturally feel about it, like I feel like sometimes the pace in my room is when we're in a situation where we have to reverse sweep. And this notion that, all right, we've got to take it now, goal by goal, game by game.
Yeah.
We can't really make too many mistakes.
Right.
For me, you know, I don't let it show too much, you know, at LAN or online, but I do get real nervous in that situations. Do you feel that as well? Or, you know, how do you cope with the situation? Like, oh, now we're going to reverse sweep.
I don't say I show nerves with it. I'd say if anything, I show just a completely different tone.
Okay.
Because obviously for the first two games, what we were doing wasn't correct.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I treat it like goal by goal, game by game, but I'm more of the, like, instead of like, we can't make a mistake now, it's just more like whatever happens at that point. So that's usually the direction I go with that. Mm. And less of like, you know, we kind of let's really tighten up. It's more like maybe actually let's loosen up a little bit.
Yeah.
In most cases. So yeah.
Mm. I like that. Yeah. So I think that we play our best Rocket League when at the end of the day when we're having fun is what I like to think.
Yeah.
With actually enjoying ourselves, things feel a little bit more in fluid, you know, obviously flow state, all that sort of comes into play where we're actually enjoying ourselves. And I think that sort of having that notion towards just being a little bit more flow with each other definitely helps.
Yeah. And really doubling down probably on the more interpersonal parts of the game or aspects of the game in those moments too. So a lot of stuff regarding comms, a lot of stuff regarding mannerisms in comms, like tone. A lot of it's going to matter in that game three when you're trying to turn a series around. So
for sure, really interesting aspects, love that.
Mm-hmm.
Now take us through the grand final of the major.
Mm.
How were you feeling going into it? Were you feeling like we're here for a reason, you know, we've reached this stage for a reason, confidence is at an all-time high? How did you feel going into it?
I mean, we felt good. We were actually, well, I won't say we, but I was thankful we didn't play Gentlemates, because Gentlemates is still, in my eyes, our hardest matchup, just stylistically. Yep. We've always, my play style has always struggled against teams like Gentlemates, teams like BDS, teams that kind of have some similar approaches to the game or some similar ideas to the game.
Yep.
We've broken through in finding a lot of fixes to these, especially in the past year. But Falcons, we like the matchup a lot better, so we're already excited about that point. Ever since that Swiss Stage 2 matchup against them where we got clobbered, my guys, I got lucky in this sense because they were just like the entire rest of the LAN. Every time we scrimmed Falcons, it was like personal. As we approached the final series too, like they would just day by day, they were like, we want Falcons again. Like we're going to kill them if we play them again. Cause you know, I was there being like, well, we got to do this. We got to look at this aspect of the game. This is where we failed against them. And they took that in stride, but they were also like, they also were like, don't worry, we have your back. We're going to destroy them if we see them again. And they were very confident in that. They were constantly kind of reassuring me, which was like the first time that's really happened with any of my rosters. So that's another reason why it's a special group of guys. But we felt confident. Game one, we felt like we got relatively unfortunate. Game two, we felt like it went the way it should have. Game three, we felt like we absolutely had all of the game. And then obviously the 0 second with Beast Mode and Dan happened. We felt like that was deserved. And then from there, you could tell that also shocked Falcons a bit. So game four and five, they weren't playing to the same level anymore at that stage. And I can't blame them, because if you concede a 0 second like that, it's, I don't know how, it's very hard to bounce back from that, from a player and coach perspective. So yeah, fortunate that game three played out the way it did, but I think even if it didn't, I was confident we were going to take that series. Mm. Maybe just in an additional game, maybe on Neo Tokyo instead. So yeah.
Yeah. I like that. It's a good breakdown. I think that it's important to sort of have that. And I think that a lot of people obviously don't get that perspective. So
right.
I really appreciate sharing that.
Yeah. No, that's definitely something I think none of us, like myself or my guys, have really talked about our thoughts. We're not a very PR heavy team, or like we don't kind of interact on social media a lot. So yeah, that is something that we probably never have stated.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Nah, for sure. Awesome, brother. Now, one thing I talked with Nick about, I don't know if this is trade secrets. Now, if it is, you can be like, LB, it's trade secrets. I won't go too far into it.
Okay.
But I noticed it. I said to Hunter, is Seth you saying something during the game? What's he saying? And then I had a chat with Nick about it, and he's like, yeah, some coaches, you know, calm just normal things during the game, like if someone's low or if someone on the other team might be low boost, or if there's, you know, space in midfield or whatever that may be. What's your mindset towards that?
So This started. I had been doing it my first season with JNAP's Chicago and Atomic.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. Especially, I think during the London Major, we had a poor series or poor tournament.
Yeah.
But they had really exclaimed to me. They were like, because I had just been doing it naturally, because it was just my instinct as a player. I was like, oh my, like he's missing this in the moment. Like whoever I was standing behind, I was like, they're missing this. They're not. Because I get it. Like, there's plenty of things I miss as a player, but I'm like, I'm the third voice or fourth voice now. Like, I can tell him like he's missing this. He can do this really quickly.
Yeah,
it's a. I'm not gonna interfere with like the flow of play, but I'm gonna tell him to get said boost or watch said position or etc.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, we like that. They were like, this. That's actually helpful. Like, we really like that. So that's when I have POVs of the players. So, you know, at a LAN or in scrims, then I feel I can do it because it's I won't interrupt the flow of the game. But when it's like, you know, RLCS like camera view, so like when we're in regionals, for example, and you have to watch the live feed, I don't do it as much because it's like horrible angles, and I really don't want to mess up something that I can't properly see.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I don't think it's trade secrets. I think that's one thing being a former player helps me with.
Yeah.
I think it's because it's like I recognize the moments where those comms are useful. And people knew me as like a big commer back in the day. Back in the day where comms were almost optional. I think some people, I think it was like John AK always said in Leipzig when I was with AXB and SIP, he was watching us play PSG at the time, which was like Farrah, Fruity, and Chaussette.
Yep.
And he was like, Seth, you sounded like he was calming for the like all three of the guys on the team. Cause SIP and AXB were a bit more quiet. Now that wasn't obviously the case, but I've always been a calmer. So when it kind of happened on stage, it just like came out naturally. I didn't, it was like, I just let it slip, but they liked it. So I think it's a good tool. If you're able to do it, I think it's a really good tool. And I think it kind of locks players back in into the moment and not get lost in like the pressure of the crowd or the pressure of the series. I think it makes them re-realize like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm not thinking about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it's never too much. I keep it pretty, pretty light. Yeah. And it's mainly for lands, I'd say. Mainly for lands.
Yeah,
I trust my guys most of the time online, but sometimes I'll sneak in a few, not commands. Well, sometimes they're commands, but something like that. Yeah,
a little bit of directiveness towards it.
Right, yeah. Direction, yeah.
Interesting. It's almost like, not really a contrast between Nick, because I remember Nick was saying that he full-on comped for a player. I think it was Evo, or it was someone who...
Yeah.
Wasn't really, so he was actually calming for them, which I think is, that's a bit crazy as well.
Yeah, I think that could be really disruptive in a team. And I think you got to keep it to where, like, because that's what I'm saying. Like, I treaded very lightly at the beginning because you don't want to, like, you still want to maintain a good image in front of your players. And I think if you're, like, calming for a player, I think the other, like, all the players on the team will be like, what is this guy doing? So. Yeah, but Nick doesn't care about that. So Nick will do what Nick wants to do.
He's that's different build.
Yeah, he is a different build. I've never seen one like him. So he does what he wants. But that's why he's such a gem to the scene. Anyway, so yeah.
No, 100%.
Yeah,
100%. Okay. Yeah. Great. I guess as we turn off the wheels and roll down the hill, I like to say towards the end of our app, obviously really good insights towards, you know, your own mindset towards being a coach, lessons we've learned along the way. And I think it's important to have, like, as we mentioned along, those sort of mental templates that we have for different situations, which we can build upon. And, I think that's really important, you know, as a coach to sort of take lessons and take, I guess, external motivations, which can, I guess, help to build you up. And I think that's what we're always doing. We're always looking to build up and what we can do as a coach to help our players, and, you know, vice versa. You know, their players can help us in that way, which I think is important.
Funny. And that's a big point too, is like always as a coach, learn from your players as well.
Yeah.
As much as they should learn from you in the sense of how to be a team and how to play as a team.
Yeah.
You should learn from them. It's kind of the ins and outs of being an individual player on a team.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that was the big thing that I took into my first year, like knowing that they know a lot more than I do, and it's okay. You know, I can still be that voice of reason. I can still have input, but at the end of the day, they know the game. They'll always know the game better than me. I feel like that's probably a key thing that I've always found along the way, which I think is different towards, you know, a coach like yourself who's come as a playing perspective. But yeah, I think it's important to sort of always be open towards it and have that mindset to be open.
And I think always as a coach to be willing to don't tell any player you're going to teach them how to play the game, because like you said, they all know how to play the game. That's a blow to their ego, and no player in their right mind would ever listen to that. But tell them you're going to teach them how to play play the game together with others. And I think that is something that's able to be digested a lot easier by even the, you know, the biggest name players. So I think definitely make that distinction.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think there's a lot of players. I get a lot of like semi-pro players or people like who are like top 16 or trying to push into top 16 who are probably take a lot of those values and lessons away with them to sort of incorporate into their own teams, which I think is really important.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, towards the end of each episode, I don't know if it's a good thing or not a good thing, but started to incorporate with Nick. He had like a little bit of a funny story that he had that happened throughout the season. Is there anything that jumps out to you, like that's a bit funny or?
What was Nick's? Just so I maybe get some inspiration. Do you remember?
His was a driving story. So he was driving, and then Jores was like backseat driving, and then he was like, he almost had a crash, and he went me through this whole situation of like almost crashing a car.
Oh my gosh.
Anything that's happened during boot camp that's been funny or?
Usually just during, it's not something specific, but during media days, because it's always, we like to do our media days for G2 immediately the day in after we get, or sorry. Immediately after the day we get in.
Yeah.
And usually we're all just tired as heck. And so we're just usually really goofy during those times. Some stuff I can't really say because it stays within the team. But I just, those are some of my favorite moments in the season. Just like when everyone's there, everyone's doing something we don't want to do, but we bond over that. Is really what it comes down to, is just that type of stuff. So nothing too personal, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, that's good.
But yeah, nothing off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, so. that's chill. I like that. What's it like, obviously, having to go through, I think probably all the top teams do that, like having to go through external stuff for the org and then obviously go and do another media day on top of it.
The RLCS ones aren't even bad. They're only like a couple hours nowadays, and you know, it's just pictures, the occasional interview, so it's not even bad.
Yeah.
G2 media is pretty extensive.
Okay.
It's pretty long. So it's a challenge, especially, you know, as I get younger players on the roster, it's definitely a challenge for them. They're still understanding the reason why the org does it, and that's okay. It takes some time for them to see kind of the value it brings to an org and to a team's brand. It's the G2 ones are challenging. They're long. They're really long. We've had some very, very long days and some very, very frustrating days from time to time.
Yeah,
but
I can imagine.
You know, you get through them. And I don't mind them. I get the purpose behind them. And I got them as a player, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Value that. Awesome. Lovely. I guess just as our sort of closing remarks, obviously we've got a lot of even younger players like listening in all around the world, actually. If you had to sort of give a little bit of advice towards maybe some of the younger guys who are looking to potentially one day try and get competitive, try and, you know, pick up a team, try and, you know, actually be competitive, what sort of advice would you give for some of those younger guys?
So, like we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, staying disciplined, having things to do outside the game, and having a good support group is vital. Obviously, putting time into the game is super important. I think when you're a player on the come up, I think jumping from team to team is not a bad idea, because you get a wide variety of people that you can work well with and that you learn that you don't work well with.
Yeah.
So, and it also is probably the quickest way to scale up to the pro scene.
Okay. Yep.
I'm not as much of a believer as being on a long-term bubble team. I think you really do have to kind of push the envelope and really try to make jumps to better teams.
Yep.
Because it's very uncommon to find three players that are pro level in the bubble scene that just haven't been discovered yet. Similar to like Team Queso.
Yep.
That doesn't happen ever almost. Yeah. So yeah. And that obviously not in a snaky way or disrespectful way, like always be respectful of your team or your teammates. And try to always be the best teammate you can be, and work well with people. But, if you want to make it in the scene, I'd say definitely do a little bit of team jumping, but be a good person while you're doing it. So, yeah.
Awesome. I really respect that, mate. I think that a lot of people will, yeah, I think that, you know, you have a voice of reason and a voice of, I guess, authority. And you know, so I think that, yeah, it's a really good insight towards your mindset. And I think it's, yeah, something that I actually didn't even think about, like the opportunity to sort of play with a wide range of players, you know, sort of get that exposure, which I think is really, really crucial towards developing as a player. So.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And most of all, it really avoids you from being complacent with like the same players for a long amount of time.
Yeah.
I think it, you worry about complacency and stuff when you get to the top and you're with the same players for a while and you have to work through those issues.
Yeah.
Until then you should never be complacent as a, you know, bubble player up in a aspiring pro.
Yeah.
You just always got to be hungry and you kind of help yourself by jumping from team to team with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Love it. Words from the man himself. Beautiful.
yes, sir.
Awesome. Now, for everyone listening, tuning in on all of the platforms that we're on, where can we find you on socials? You know, where can we go and connect with you or follow what you're up to, what you're getting done?
Yeah. Most common social is definitely just Twitter. Zathu. I tweet a decent amount from there. I'll reply to people a decent amount there. Sometimes I respond to DMs, but sometimes I also try to let them slide because sometimes there's a few.
Yeah.
Twitch is also just Zathu. I will try to get back into streaming at some point, but I've just been lazy with that. And it's been a busy season, but those are the two primary ones. I don't really use anything else.
Awesome. Cool. And I'll put all the links in the, down below. So you can always tap on them as well.
Awesome.
Well, awesome, brother. Really appreciate you jumping on today and sharing your mindset towards everything. As we sort of had a bit of a recap earlier. I've really, you know, taken a lot from it and, I'm sure a lot of our viewers have taken even more from it. From the mindset between, you know, Zathu himself. The great coach.
I appreciate that and always appreciate, you know, having me on and having the convo with you. Just like last time, it was a great one and this one was as well. And yeah, thanks to all the listeners as well for tuning in. Make sure you tune in next time as well.
Awesome. Well, I'll see you in Saudi. Won't see you at Worlds, but good luck at Worlds as well, but I'll see you in Saudi as well.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. See you there, brother.
Yes, sir. See you.